Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We got the beautiful skies over the Inner Harbor here, but I want to tell you about our friends at Gainesville State Fair. They're mixing up the chicken and waffles. We're getting the fresh air, the beautiful days that look like this. Come on out and celebrate a little bit of freedom here at this point. Certainly get across the street with El Guapo, something you couldn't do last spring because it wasn't there. Grab yourself a margarita with our friends. I'm going to grab Evan Brown on my crab cake tour, which will begin at Fagley's next month. I'm going to be breaking some news about eating some crab cakes and drinking some beer and probably shucking some oysters as well. We will begin all of that at Fadley's as well as Costas to start things off in April. Shipping around the world and the shipping them out to Catonsville very, very soon, where Don Moeller is very, very happy about that. By the way, Don Moeller's offspring, Jeff Moeller, a guest on the program last week, taught a little Terps basketball as well as optimism for the Orioles, which Don shares, which is why I gave Don orange skies today, and well over the sky. This guy had an office over the sky for a little while, right, Don?
I tell you what, we keep having these guests on that are aging me rapidly. Rob and I go back decades as well.
When you used to work for a living, right?
Exactly. But Rob Gould, former vice president at BGE and Constellation Energy, and then Florida Power and Light, and now out there as a consultant trying to make sense of all things electric grid and power in the United States. Rob, welcome. We've done derechos, blizzards, hurricanes. We've done it all, have we not, buddy?
We have. And I'll tell you, though, you don't know what a hurricane's like until you have a Cat 5 bearing down on you in Florida. That gives you a whole new sense of reality, let me tell you.
So you mean our little dust-ups?
Right? Nothing.
Our little dust-ups up here didn't prepare you for Florida power and light?
Nothing like huddling under a desk when your windows are shaking outside in the middle of a Cat 5 building, and it's still shaking. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's a reality check.
Well, welcome, and we're going to have you educate us on all things. But off the air, I was saying it really is it's a small community in some ways, an inspirational community, Rob, in that so many folks that we know, we just interviewed Martin Knott recently, who has a new venture called Air that he's starting related to indoor air quality. I think that's going to obviously be front and center with everyone now. And Martin's a cancer survivor, and everyone knows Nestor's wife's Jen's story as a two-time leukemia survivor. Your son's a cancer survivor. Tell folks a little bit about your experience with your son, because it's also an inspirational story, because he ends up walking on and becoming a punter for the Florida Gators, and now he's in veterinary school. I mean, a pretty remarkable story.
Yeah, he was about 8.5 years old and woke up. He had some pretty nasty night sweats and things of that nature, and took him to the doctor. And long story short, you know, he was going to write a script for just some normal prescriptions. And I said, I'd never seen night sweats like this. I was wringing out literally his sheets, and that was it. He looked up at me and he said, I think we're going to get some blood work and some chest x-rays done. And it turned out that he had Hodgkin's. You know, if you're going to be a kid and you're going to get cancer, that's the one to get, because really basically 6 months door to door, you're cured.
Not what you want to hear as a parent, though, right? Well, I think Damian O'Doherty are a good friend of KO. You don't want that doc to walk in and say, Mr. and Mrs. Gould, your son has cancer.
Yeah, I'm compressing it big time. I mean, the three weeks of hell that we went through waiting for a diagnosis, hoping for any kind of strange disease, anything but cancer. And of course, the internet is not your friend. You're looking for everything and anything. Excuse me, but he basically
My wife
went
Googled
through,
it the day before, by the way, Rob. So I left my wife at the hospital and she Googled and said, I have leukemia. I'm like, what? You know? And the next day the doctor walked in and said, you got leukemia. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And they also tell you to stay off the internet. Of course, that's human nature. You tell somebody not to touch a stove, they're going to touch a stove. So we were really trying to figure it out. But he came out great. He had never played football till the 11th grade. He woke up between his sophomore and junior year, walked downstairs, told my wife he wanted to play football. Never played in his life, never even played soccer organized. And he taught himself literally how to punt on YouTube. And for the better part of that summer, he did that. And then he tried out for the Howard High School football team, made it kind of the the typical, you know, Hollywood story. The tight end was also their punter. He goes down, so Jonathan goes in. First kick, horrible. I mean, just the snap was, you know, went over his head into the end zone, and it was a mess. But fast forward, and we had spent time in Florida, and we had the Florida prepaid college fund. He went to the University of Florida, stalked with my wife the football team to find out when their training or their tryouts would be, their legitimate walk-on tryouts, not this preferred walk-on stuff. And first week he goes out there and he calls me about a half hour later. Hour later says, "Hey, I made the team." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" I said, first thing I said, "Stay off social media." Yeah. First thing I said, "Stay off social media. Do not do anything. And then make sure you go and talk to the coach you were talking to."
Right.
Ask the question definitively. Did I make the team? Calls me back 5 minutes later, sheepishly says, "I got to come back for a second tryout." Goes back a week later, has his tryout. They told him, "Hey, you know what? Literally go to the front door. We'll post everything up there." There were 15 kids. He calls me, said, "I made the team." And I said, "Really?" He goes, "Well, they asked for my contact lens information so they can buy some contact lenses and put in the locker." I said, "Okay, they're spending money on you now. You've made it." But it was a wonderful experience. It kept them out of trouble. I mean, I got a close-up visual into the business of college football. Let me tell you, it's every bit of a business. And I told them to learn from it. But you can.
What does that mean? Hey, Rob, don't gloss over that. I mean, that's what we love about this show. We're going to get into all of the energy stuff. But what does that mean that you got a close up look up close and personal to the business side?
By the way, I don't usually give a shout out to my tower engineer here at WNST JR, but he's the world's biggest Florida Gator fan.
There you go. Give me a glitter chop. There you go.
He'll be watching this segment, so he'll want to know.
Yeah, I think it's bottom line is it's a multi-million dollar, you know, arguably a billion dollar business for these guys. The players, they pretty much get they are the the material for the program, and the boosters, the money that goes into this, the TV rights, all of that. You go to a game day in Gainesville, Florida, and it is like you're going to Mecca. And the money that they spend on these kids, the swag that I watched him, you know, get from the Nike clothing all the way up to when they went to the Peach Bowl and the watches and the things of that nature. And there's somewhat of a, you know, it's not reality in some cases. And a lot of these kids, I mean, Jonathan was fortunate, right? He comes from a good area, good schooling, good background. A lot of these kids, especially when you look at some of the players that were coming out of, say, South Florida, this is their way out. So they're looking for the opportunity to make it big, and only, you know, a very small percentage make it. And ironically, in Jonathan's case, both the punters that were ahead of him, one was drafted by the Raiders 2 years ago and is actually on the Ravens now in the practice squad. And then his brother walked on, a preferred walk on to the Kansas City Chiefs and was their starting punter all year last year. So you get a sense for how they run their business and how they run their program. And the kids really are just, you know, they're tools of the program, to be very blunt. But they get an education, they learn it. And, look, for those guys, it's 10 to 11 months, literally a year, where they're getting up at 5:30 in the morning, going to weights, going to school at 7 o'clock in the morning, come back to practice at 1 in the afternoon, and they're not done till 7 at night. And that is straight through 10 to 10 and a half months a year. They have no life, and that's it. So it's an interesting way to watch it.
Sounds like a military gig that you're familiar with, right?
It is a military gig. Here's the deal. I was getting paid to be in the military. These guys aren't getting paid. And I have some, you know, candidly, I have some qualms about this.
Oh, my God. Next Thursday, when they put these kids on the hardwood every year, you know, rah, 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 shish, boom, bah, but I've done sports radio for 30 years here, Rob. So it comes around every year. And yeah. I realize, and especially this past year when they're kicking these bowl games off, I'm like, this feels greasier than it's ever felt. Maybe it's just because I'm 52 and I smell grease.
Well, and you look at the salaries that these coaches are drawing, and you look at the fact that many of these kids are what's behind making that happen. And Jonathan, you know, he did it. He loved it. It was a great opportunity. And if you're in North Florida, you're God, like, as a Gator. And yeah, he's at the University of Florida now as a double gator. He's in vet school, and he'll come out as a veterinarian. And if he decides to set up practice in North Florida, between, you know, having been a gator football player and now a double gator, you know, major, he's going to be set up well. But it's a phenomenon I never fully appreciated, being a Colt and then a Ravens fan. I had no appreciation for what it's like to watch SEC football. It is absolutely like going to church on Sunday. It is just unreal. And the money that's spent on these programs, and the, you know, there's a reason why the SEC was out there playing during COVID. There's no doubt about it.
Describe pre-COVID. Let's go to pre-COVID Gator football. Describe the day in the Gould family from when you wake up that morning to when you go to bed that night. Describe a Gator football day for folks who might not be familiar, because we have Maryland, but that's not big time.
Well, first football. Thing, you don't go to a Gators game. You go to the swamp.
Yeah. You go to the swamp and you live it. And I would say everything I just said, that, you know, he's up literally at 5 o'clock in the morning in the weight room, not done till 7:30, goes to class. And his classes were pretty hardcore. I mean, he kept a 4.0 average through this whole thing. And
Can I ask you, as a parent, you never lived that stage life, that you know, the Mullers running the kids to lacrosse practice and this and this camp. Did he do a lot of that or no?
Yeah, he did a lot of rec. He did a lot of rec. Like, you expose him to things. Of course we did. But
for most kids on that track to go to that kind of program, it's been a lifestyle since they were 10 for them and their parents, whatever sport, whether it's women's gymnastics, it doesn't matter.
I wouldn't even say 10. I'd say 4 or 5 years old, and they get them on that track. I mean, these kids, when you see them walking through game day and you see the recruits walking the sidelines and yucking it up with the players and the coaches, I mean, you know, the coaches are literally trying to get these kids to come to these programs. They are throwing everything at them legally, of course. Then they, you know, including the kitchen sink, to get them to want to be a Gator or to want to be, you know, at Alabama or wherever it is. And it's a true competition, because at the end of the day, they're trying to put a winning program on the field, which is going to bring more money into the coffers of the program and be able to attract. They're building a phenomenal football facility down there. Baseball, people don't think about Gator baseball. Gator baseball is number one in the country, and they have a phenomenal facility they just built. So it's significant money that goes into these programs.
And a plague won't shut it down.
No. Well, the plague won't shut it down. It won't shut it down in a red state. You know, there were no, you know, DeSantis was very specific about not having people in the stands, and he did go that route. But that doesn't stop the enthusiasm for Gator football or any of the sports, but Gator football in particular. And no, I mean, we ran him around and did all those things just for rec, like, you know, baseball and softball, what have you. But as soon as he got into football, it was a very, very different situation. And we experienced it down there. But, you know, again, there is some separation, keeping the parents at bay, you know, because at that point they are now part of the football team. They're part of that program. And I would dare say it's really no different than any other major Division I football program, whether it's the Big Ten, SEC, what have you. They treat these kids, they're aggressive with them. It was, you know, in some cases what I watched was sometimes rivaling boot camp, the way they yell at them and keep them moving. But I will say this, it kept him and others off the street and out of trouble. And you can see how these kids, a lot of these kids need that structure. They need the structure from where they're coming from. And they certainly do get it.
Rob, the last question on football. We didn't expect to spend this much time. It's been fun.
But I am enjoying it, by the way.
Oh, it's great, great stuff. But one of the questions I have was for someone, and again, I've had some experience, you know, my not at that level. My son was a Division III lacrosse player, very different scene, really nice family-oriented scene. I had nieces and nephews that both were big-time Division I lacrosse players at UVA and Virginia, I mean, and North Carolina. But when you're a part of a big-time college football program like that, one of the thoughts I always have, do the players interact directly and develop a relationship with the head coach, or is the head coach pretty much the puppeteer up above and the assistants doing all the work? How does that play out?
Yeah, I think, and look, I played baseball at Towson State for Billy Hunter, and I think it's very different to your point. No, they pretty much develop a rapport with their, like in this case, special teams coach. They're day in and day out more special teams coach in Jonathan's case. I would say that, of course, you know, the head coach, they know who the players are. They know all their players. But what I observed is there's a lot more interaction and a lot more focus, as you would expect, between the head coaches and, say, your quarterback, your running backs, your cornerbacks, your safeties, that type of thing. The ones that are out there, you know, making the plays with regularity. And then the special teams players pretty much are more with the special teams coach. And depending on if there's oversight, say from offensive or defensive line, what have you, there's a lot of that. But it's fascinating to watch, because you really do get a glimpse on the inside of how it all works. And I can't tell you how many times, Don, I asked the question to your point. They would go through drills and scout team punting to first team. And I say, hey, how did you do? And he goes, well, I bombed it. I said, did the coach see it? He goes, I don't think so. He was over on the other side.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, to your point, I think they don't see it, but at the end of the day, they know who they are. And, you know, the coaches do have an obligation to develop these young men and women that they're coaching, depending on the program. And I think they take it seriously.
So is your son, is he stamped a Gator for life now? Is that what they do?
He's a Gator for life. He's, like I said, he's known as a double Gator, got his bachelor's, and he'll get his veterinary, you know, education, his master's, if you will. And he'll go on. He wants to be a surgeon. He actually wanted to be an oncologist at first, but I think there's, you know, subliminally in the back of his mind, I think, you know, and I talked to Damien about this on Facebook a little bit. You're either into it and you want to give back, or you want to forget about it. And I think he's kind of more on the middle to forget about it, put it behind him.
It was part of him, but let's do something else now.
Yeah, so. And he feels strong. Yeah, and look, we're all part of the Hopkins family. I'm on their Hopkins advisory board and for Pete's Oncology, and you just give it back. And I think it's something that, honestly, I think he and probably Damien's daughter in the future, that's going to hit them when they're probably in their 35 or 40 time, you know, range, when they have a little bit more money and they can start to give back to the community. And that's probably when it will mean more.
Well, there's nothing more there. Again, if you're tuning in, we are with longtime energy expert Rob Gould, many, many years, BGE, Constellation Energy, Florida Power and Light. And
Texas Rob, freeze is over and we're talking football.
Yeah, man, we're going to talk Texas. But Rob, you know, you mentioned this is Baltimore Positive. And for those of us and people know, my story with my grandson and our relationship with Hopkins Children's Center, there is nothing more positive than Hopkins Children's Center. Those of us who know that place like the back of our hand.
1.6 miles. And by the way, it's the seventh anniversary.
Just one of the most remarkable experiences in my life. Well, Rob, let's talk Texas. I mean, I'm telling you, you're the first person. I got to tell you, you are without a doubt the first person I thought of when I wake up and there's no power in Texas. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, my buddy Rob Gould, he could easily have been in Texas as the vice president of ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, I guess, working there. I've tried to do some research on it. It's complicated. I need you to take Nestor and I to school. We're going to sit back, shut up, educate our listeners. What the hell happened in Texas and why did it happen, Rob?
Yeah, well, I think my perception of it, because my company, I was with Florida Power and Light, but I was also the chief communications officer for the parent, which is NextEra Energy. And NextEra Energy, people probably have never heard of, but it is the world's largest generator of wind and solar. So there are wind farms down there. And so I'm familiar with the Texas market to a pretty good extent. We were actually looking to purchase a utility down there called Oncor. I think there's probably three things that happened if I were really to kind of break it down. First, you had basically equipment failure. And why did you have equipment failure? Because the equipment down there, the natural gas pipelines or the plants and so forth, they're really not built for that type of severe cold. Cold that was even colder than Anchorage, Alaska at that moment. And it is, I want to say, a once in a generation type event, even though they had something in 2011 that brought severe cold to them, it was still a once in a generation event. And really what it comes down to is, and we face the same thing, whether you're in Maryland with BGE, whether you're in Florida with Florida Power and Light, you know, do you want to pay for the investment for that worst case event? And you have to make the call. And so BGE is heavily investing in the system. But let's face it, what's our worst case event that can come through? A derecho? Yeah, that can. We saw the damage that can do. Probably a tropical storm or a Cat 1 hurricane, maybe Cat 2. In Florida, if you look at what we did, and this is the key difference, it's called investment. In Florida, we spent more than $5 billion with a B dollars to upgrade the grid in Florida over the past decade.
Well, you have to, right? Literally.
You have to, but
I spent enough time in Florida, though. Everything goes underwater at some point there.
Well, you have to, but it's everything from looking at what's the wind speed that potentially could impact your service territory. 90% of Florida Power and Light's service territory is within 20 miles, I believe, or 10 miles, actually, of the coast, when you think about the population density.
And that's right? Exactly where 165 miles an hour would hit, right? Literally.
Correct. And you look at what happened with Hurricane Irma in 2017, I believe it was. We lost, at that time, we had forecasted we were going to lose a couple million people. We lost 4.4 million customers. Now, customer, you've always heard me say this when I was up here, is a meter. So multiply that times two. So you're talking 8 to 10 million people literally without a power. But here, if you look at what we did, we were able to restore 2 million customers by the time the storm exited within the first 24 hours, 3 million within the first 3 days, 4 million within the first 4 days, and then the rest, the 4.4, we got at the end of the 10 days. The bottom line is that the investment was made, and there was a ton of automation on the network that was actually reswitching and bringing power back on, where you didn't have the people in place, you know, in areas because the storm was still raging. But automation.
Does that mean there's no one aorta that one thing goes down, another thing could serve as?
Oh, sure. I mean, the grid is not symmetrical. The grid, anything can happen on the grid at given times. But here's the difference. In Florida, Florida operates the grid through Florida Power and Light, and it operates it for all the different entities. They also generate all the power. So they have an ability to make sure that power is going where it needs to go. And if they have to shut power off for any reason, they can adjust and move it around. There's also another difference here that happened in Texas. Excuse me. In Texas, the communications with the customer is with ERCOT, right? That's what it appears to be. But let me
tell folks, Rob, so we're not playing inside of it. Tell folks what ERCOT is. I've read about it.
Yeah.
Still, is it equivalent to our Public Service Commission?
No, it's like the grid operator. It's like PJM here in Maryland and Delaware and Pennsylvania. Pardon me. It's basically coordinating all grid operations where the power is moving. So if you recall, we had that big blackout that occurred in 2013, I believe it was, that started with a tree in Ohio. And it actually caused power loss across the grid to start cascading. Well, PJM was actually able to coordinate that response with the various utilities, and they were able to adjust as it was happening.
It's amazing that something called PJM controls like the camera that's functioning here and all of this right this moment that, you know, that I always say if the Russians want to get after us, that the grid, right? That's such a spatial term, right? What the grid is. What is the grid?
Well, the grid is basically all the different utilities connected and all the power that's connected. And people might think, well, it's interconnected in the sense that it's symmetrical and that you have a variety of utilities that are just totally connected, and they do. They're connected. In Texas, it's shut off. They wanted to have one grid within Texas not connected to other outside state grid operators. So basically, they were just operating their own grid.
Well, Rob, break that. Let me jump in for a second, because I really do love this, because I really am trying to understand it. I noticed one of the things was that El Paso did better than Houston or Dallas, because El Paso had chosen to remain connected to the quote unquote Western grid. Yeah. So we talk Western grid. How many grids, major grids, are there across the country?
I believe there's probably five or six major grids. You have, excuse me, I apologize for the coughing.
Right.
You have PJM, you have ERCOT, you have
Nature Royal Farms coffee. They don't have that down where you are, huh?
Yeah. No, they don't. Not in Florida. But yes, you're right, Don. They were able to draw power, it sounds like, from somewhere else. But here in this case, you didn't have that. So you had, you know, natural gas pipelines freezing up. You had the investment that had not been made in terms of the equipment. So it wasn't able to, even if you had natural gas flowing, they weren't able to accept it because they had problems. And then, meaning accepting the gas, for example. And then you had other situations where, go back to the customer communications, and that's an important piece here. Customers here in Maryland or in Florida, their point of contact is BGE or Florida Power and Light. Soup to nuts. You know, they get their
Everybody
bill.
Everybody knows that, right? I mean, my radio station's gone down on Hard Road. BGE is going to fix me, right? And they always do.
But you go in Texas, and Texas, their relationship is with that third-party fuels provider. So in Maryland, we're deregulated. In Florida, we're regulated. What does that mean? In Maryland, you're able to get your power. You're literally the juice. You can buy that from another third-party supplier, right? And if you choose to do that, the bill, the BGE bill, will have that component on it. So you'll get the bill. You see on there the component for the fuel is on the bill. But that's your exposure to them. That's it. Your point of contact is BGE. So if you have an outage, who do you call? BGE. Who's going to come fix it? BGE. You got one source of information. Florida, same thing. It is a regulated state, but nonetheless, regulated simply means that, unlike Maryland, Florida Power and Light has the power plant and they have the distribution lines. So they do soup to nuts, and then they have the relationship with the customer. So you're buying your juice from Florida Power and Light. You lose your power, Florida Power and Light puts the lights back on.
But you don't have a choice. If I move to Florida, I'm buying my energy from you.
You are, but to be very blunt, your price in Florida is 4 to 5 cents a kilowatt hour cheaper than it is up here. So even with all that investment.
Now, Rob, you know people are out there saying, why? Why is that?
Because what I'm saying is, what the hell is 4 cents a kilowatt? What does that mean to me?
That means you're going to be saving some bucks, some gelt. You're going to basically,
especially in a state where it's 100 degrees all the time and you're like burning it 6 months.
Absolutely. And so in Maryland, you have a situation where, you know, you have basically rates that are set, and the commission does that in Florida as well. But there was energy efficiency way back when to deregulate the state. You had to incentivize the utilities to actually want to promote energy efficiency, because if you didn't do that, you're taking money from their bottom line. I used to say when I was in Maryland, the meter spinning, it didn't matter, right? Because we're still going to get the same rate of return smoothed out over the year as an entity, as the utility. In Florida, the meter spinning does make a difference, because when it's hot out, we want to see that air conditioning from a business perspective. We want to see that meter turning, because that's more money to the utility. And the same thing in the winter, if people are cold down there, they're going to run the heat. But basically what I'm saying to you is that the market design is a bit different. Florida Power and Light takes at least I'm going to speak for them, they take the operating efficiency extremely seriously. Not suggesting BGE doesn't, but you know, when you look at Florida Power and Light, they've had rates basically that are continued low, and they have been doing it for years. So, you know, basically they're proving you can be a successful utility, reinvest in the infrastructure, prove that reinvestment to the commission and to the customer. And if you think about it, it's always been very straightforward to me. If you're a utility and your customer's not happy, who's then going to get that call? The legislator's going to get that call. And then who's going to get a call after that? The regulator's going to get a call. And what
we had those
mean?
Discussions once oh, or yeah. twice, didn't we, Rob?
Oh, yeah. So it's a virtuous circle, right?
Right.
Customer happy, legislators happy, regulators happy, which means the utility's happy because they're going to get a rate of return that allows them. Because if you think about it, what happens with utilities, they're not putting money up for their just like altruistic reason. They're putting money up to invest in the system so they can make a rate of return, a good return on their investment. But you only get that return on investment if you're proving that what you're investing in is actually going to deliver when you need it. That's what's happening now in Texas. It's not it didn't deliver what was at least expected or promised. And so the investment wasn't made. And you can argue the question, why didn't they make the investment? Did they not make the investment because they didn't expect that black swan event to occur, which it did? Because at the end of the day, there's a cost. Florida Power and Light customers pay for those investments. BGE customers pay for those investments. Texas customers have to pay for those investments.
Those storms aren't free is what you're saying.
Nothing
that aftermath,
free.
The day that's after right. Hurricane Irma, that's a real cost that Mr. Insurance Guy's not necessarily picking up. I mean, what I was going to bring up in Texas, my cousin lives in Katy, Texas. You know, okay, the power goes out, you get a little coal, you light a candle. Then the pipes burst.
Right.
Like there's a whole different level of unintended
event.
Consequences down the line.
But,
right?
But in Texas, here's the difference what I was getting at. Their relationship, the customer relationship, is with that third-party supplier. They don't have that relationship with the utility like BGE down there.
Is that ERCOT, Rob?
No. ERCOT is the grid operator.
It's Joe's Electric, literally, right?
Well, basically what you have is you have a plethora of third-party suppliers, Acme Power Supply, I'm making it up, but JEXA, Dominion Power, Constellation New Energy. That's who their bill comes from. That's who their relationship comes from. So there was.
But they have no ability to fix it.
Correct. They have no.
I call BG&E. I'm pissed. At least BG&E is going to fix it. They have to fix it. They're the one on the phone in Texas.
Right.
I call BG&E and they're like, no, it's these people.
Well, let's step back. You're not even going to call BG, or you're not going to call Oncor. You're not going to call CenterPoint Energy. You're going to call your third party supplier. And then on top of it, what you have down there is because it's a deregulated state, a lot of customers, as we've seen in the headlines, got sticker shock because they locked into a certain price, never expecting to have to be hit with that black swan event that's going to jack their prices up because supply and demand is not in equilibrium.
Well, hey, Rob, I got to tell you, and Nestor, this was interesting to me. I assumed, I'm so glad you brought that point up, and I need you to clarify because I still may not have it straight.
Yeah.
I assumed when I saw the stories of $5,000 and $6,000 electric bills that it was a mistake. The digger I dug into it, the bill is not in error. The bill represents the market price, right, Rob?
It's a gouge.
Yeah, well, it's
not even a gouge. I don't think.
I was going to say it's the market price,
right?
And basically,
like getting an Uber in the rain after the Super Bowl, kind of sort of.
Correct.
Surge.
Even worse. Yep.
Right.
It's surge pricing. There's no question about it. And in Maryland, PJM, which again is the equivalent to ERCOT, they have an auction. They have a based on what the utilities tell them, they'll have an auction based on the forecast of what power will be needed. And the utilities bid into that, and they basically are, you know, setting the price for their customers based on that. In the situation, as I understand it, in ERCOT, they did actually have pricing locked in, but there was an escalation. If they had an event like this and they needed to go out to the market to get the power, you saw the jacking up. I mean, some of the prices I saw were $17,000, $18,000
more.
And then I just saw last week where the commission in Texas said they were inclined not to do anything to relieve customers of those bills. And now the governor, of course, he's saying he's going to do something. I mean, they're going to have to do something, but this goes back to caveat, you know, emptor, right? Let the buyer beware, because you don't know what you're going to be getting yourself into. And anytime somebody says, well, this will never happen, if they're saying it's never going to happen, you want to at least think it might happen and prepare for it.
Well, Rob, I'm, you know, people, again, we're with Rob Gould, longtime energy exec at BGE, Constellation Energy, Florida Power and Light, now out there trying to make sense
and
of the
Towson
energy.
Tigers.
And a Towson Tiger baseball player for Billy Hunter and a Gator for life and now trying to make sense of energy across the United States. Listen, anybody.
And a volunteer firefighter Pikesville. Let's not
volunteer firefighter. I mean, near and dear. Rob and I have many discussions over the years about the outstanding work that the volunteers do in Baltimore County. Boy, Nestor, that's a discussion for another day, because what a valuable
– That is a discussion.
We should have them on, because they do terrific work, all the guys out there, Glenn and everybody.
I will tell you, that is an anomaly in this country.
Yeah, it's remarkable, the volunteer. We will have them on. That's a great topic. But, Rob, you know, everybody knows my – political leanings, my political tendencies. When I look at Texas, I say, hey, you had a dummies. Of course it didn't work, because they chose to go it on their own. They didn't want, they got this thing that government is bad. And part of me says, y'all get what you deserve, you dummies.
You voted
but at the
for
same
Ted
time,
Cruz.
Is it that simple? Is it that simple that they just thumbed their nose at regulation and said we're going on our own? And was this inevitable?
Or we're going to Cancun?
I'm not sure if I could say it was inevitable, because at the end of the day, you know, Texas' economy is strong, and one of the things, just like Florida, the economy is strong. And what's a major driver? Think about the two or three major drivers behind. The reason why someone wants to move their business from somewhere else, say California to Texas, it's the tax basis. It's the fuel cost because of electricity. That's a big cost or a big driver, and transportation cost. They have had a very strong economy and not had this type of event that's occurred. So it is definitely very much of a black swan, once in a generation event. Foreseeable for sure, but. Did the entities have the incentive or desire to put the money into the system for that black swan event? And I can't speak to that. I don't know what that was.
But had
they
been regulated, Rob, let me push back on that. I love this. If they had been regulated, wouldn't they then have been required to make those investments?
They are regulated. It's just like in Maryland, right? Maryland is a deregulated state, but the Public Service Commission for Maryland does regulate BGE and does set their rate of return and all the programs, energy efficiency and other things. It's the same in Texas.
So the state of Texas allowed these companies to gouge people.
No, what I would say is this. I would say that the market allowed them to set programs that were in place for the third party supply. We're talking about two different things. We're talking about put to the side the winterization of the equipment and the investment in the equipment. That is regulated. That's, you know, they're going to put money into that equipment. They're going to be asking the commission to seek a return on that investment, and they have to approve that. What we're talking about are the programs that the third party marketers put out there that customers were then solicited, just like we all get solicitations in Maryland for, get your fuel, lock it in at a certain rate. It'll show up on your BGE bill, you know, set it and forget it. It'll be cheaper. So you're shopping for your electricity. That's a very different piece of it. And I'm not specifically familiar with what Texas does when it comes to that, but I do believe there is some regulatory component to that. And if there isn't, I suspect there will be going forward.
Well, Rob, had they been part, had they not refused to be part of the nationwide grid, had they been part of the nationwide grid, would this power outage have still happened?
I suspect that there would have been some element of that, but I think what you have to do is go to the root cause of what occurred, and that is the infrastructure was not able to handle the significant cold weather that occurred.
Okay, so who mandates then in Texas?
And again, that's where the commission is going to have to either dictate or work with the, you know, get a working group with the companies and say, what are your plans for the future, and then approve them. So there's definitely going to be a commission play here. There's no question. Look, I was talking to a reporter from Dallas. This blew me away. the communications plans for communicating to customers. I know you'll appreciate this when I say it, Don, but they're thinking actually the legislature is going to develop the communications plans for the utilities. That's scary.
You chuckled at that, didn't you?
Yeah, you don't want legislators or regulators defining how you're going to communicate. I was blown away by the fact that here we are in 2021, and I was talking to this reporter, and he said, "Well, what would you guys do? Do you think maybe some robocalls or things like that?" I said, "Robocalls are like we were doing that, 10 years ago, 5 years ago when we had the hurricanes approaching. Once we were under a watch, we were in Florida. We were going out with robocalls, telling customers what to do and be forewarned. We were communicating via text, via email, via social media. ERCOT, I don't believe, and again, subject to check, I don't believe they're equipped. I had almost 120 people in a major storm event that we ramp up, and they were focused solely on communicating with the customer.
Well, Rob, just go. I mean, again, just to take a page out of our personal history, whether it was a blizzard or yep. derecho or hurricane. I mean, you at the head, running your communication operation, I at that time running it for both Jim Smith and for Kevin Kamenetz, and as well as other counties in the city. We were basically in Warren, Baltimore County. It's an emergency operation center. BGE, for folks who don't know.
Every snow event is this, right?
Nestor, I don't think the county was unique in this, but in Baltimore County, there's an emergency operation center that has representatives 24/7 in that center, in a central location. Right. So Rob has someone representing BGE in the basement of the county office building. Has someone from his communication team, from fire, from police, from public works, sitting down there. There's
But I guess what I'm trying to say is there are so many tools that are tried and true in the toolbox right now, that if they are going to create something, which again, still blows me away, we're in 2021 and they're talking about doing that. There are so many tried and true tools in the toolbox that can be put to use for the benefit of the customer. But it sounds like they're going to have to make some organizational structural changes because, again, I don't believe ERCOT is equipped to reaching out to customers. And case in point, I saw one tweet that blew me away in the middle of this. They were tone deaf, right? Because one of the things that I know you and I have always felt strongly about is you need to be in touch with where your customer is or where your constituent is at that moment. And whatever you're going to put in social media, whatever it is, it better be in lockstep with where their head is, because if it's not, you're going to have an explosion. And they were putting out a couple of tweets talking about, maybe wear your fleece.
You're not that cold.
Well, it was just, let's put it this way. There was a great divide between reality and what was being put out in social media.
Right. Nestor's got a cousin or a friend that had any water. I had a friend call me from Houston, their pipes had all burned. And you're saying, hey, maybe you ought to put on an extra scarf.
That's not going to cut it. Customers are going to rebel. And then you're going to have everybody and their mother upset. But this is a real serious situation. There's no doubt about it. Can it happen anywhere else? I guarantee you, in talking to former colleagues of mine in Florida, they all dusted off their war plans. And the war plans that we had done, were pretty impressive. They were exercised regularly.
Well, for both of you guys being grownups, this is like best practices, sharing information. I mean, that's how we solved COVID this year, right?
Well, during my tenure, I had representatives from my counterparts asked, could I have their people from Pacific Gas and Electric, Detroit Edison, Ameren in St. Louis. I could go on. We had multiple companies come in and benchmark, and that's the beauty of that industry. The beauty of the electric industry is that there is such sharing of information across the board because they do get it. If there's a problem, it's going to spread. I mean, look, I was down in Puerto Rico. One of the things you probably don't know is I was down in Puerto Rico for months after they had Hurricane Maria come through. And I was coordinating the communications for the big utilities that were dispatched down there, were barging their trucks literally from Florida down to Puerto Rico. And it was unity of message. It was unity of effort. It was trying to marry those up. And especially when you have the federal government and their Corps of Engineers and Homeland Security and everybody else, you've got to have that unity of effort and unity of message. And you can have, I used to say this all the time to Steve Warner, BG, you can have the best, most successful restoration. If you have not set the tone for it and the customers don't perceive it to have been through your communications, it won't matter. There's a psychological element to any restoration after a major event.
So you're saying throwing toilet paper to people in San Juan probably wasn't the best.
Now you're getting political.
Now, so hey, Rob,
that would be what not to do to your customer.
I would not disagree with that.
There you go.
Rob would not have thrown toilet paper. Real quick, before you run.
Yeah,
it's terrible to ask you to do this in 30 seconds or 60 seconds. But Nestor mentioned something earlier that I think people do worry about, and I want to throw it to you. He talked about an attack on the electrical grid. I remember I asked Congressman Ruppersberger one time. I said, Dutch, what keeps you up at night? And he didn't hesitate. He said, cyber attacks. He said, Don, that's what keeps me up at night. How secure, Rob, is the nationwide grid to prevent what Nestor's talking about, a foreign entity coming in and doing to the entire nation what happened to Texas?
You know, I probably would say, just having been in the industry as long as I have, I'd be more concerned about the municipalities as opposed to the big electric companies. We were getting pinged. I'm trying to remember. I think the last count, 3 million pings a day at our company. That's NextEra Energy, right? You're talking about the whole operations because we were controlling, you know, we were controlling, say, you know, wind farms in Texas from Florida, for example. So I actually was involved at the federal level as an industry rep for communications, working with the feds on this very topic. There's a boatload of money that has been spent by the utilities across the country, and a boatload of human, you know, mental capital into it as well, communications plans, et cetera. I feel good about the big companies. I think if I were to worry about anything, it'd probably be the municipalities. And I think that's just because they don't necessarily have the money to invest in the infrastructure. But
well, we had the malware attack here in Baltimore, which is, you know, just an example of something, right?
It's exactly right. But I think that at the end of the day, I think that it is a risk. There's no doubt about it. But I would say that I do believe I'll speak for the industry. The industry, in partnership with the federal government, at least when I was there, is doing and was doing every single thing they could do to plan for this. And they've got black hats and white hats in there. And they're literally people in our company every day that are trying to infiltrate and find the gaps in the system. But there's no doubt the Iranians, the Korean, North Koreans, the Chinese, they're all trying to infiltrate. They were going at it. And it's a real serious issue, but I do believe it's getting the attention it needs. I don't think that anybody would sit there in the industry and say it's not being taken seriously, because I do think that that is the number one concern, especially when you're talking about nuclear power plants, for example.
Absolutely. Well, Nestor, we had energy.
Thank you for coming on. Appreciate
energy 101 today. Yeah. How about that? Yeah. Maybe even 102.
Rob, I don't know if you know this, because you've known Mueller a million years. He was my high school guidance counselor in 1982 at Dundalk High. And he was a social studies teacher that never taught social studies, because by the time I got to him, he was already on his track, you know. So in retirement, we've decided that this should be a social studies program. So we appreciate you coming in as the guest speaker for our assembly here today.
I'm happy to do it. I don't want to make Don feel bad. He knows somebody, Bill Rust, who is my my baseball coach at Pikesville Senior High School.
Bill, and, one of my all-time favorites.
Talk about feeling like you're starting to get old. Ooh. And you're starting to see your high school teachers who are out there on Facebook. Boy, it's kind of scary. And
see, if you would have wrestled at Pikesville, you would have known a couple of my legends over the
years, you know? Oh, son.
Bill and I grabbed a beer right before the pandemic. Bill spent a lot of time down in South Carolina now, and we grabbed a beer when he was back in Catonsville. Hey, Nestor, quick reminder before you jump out of here. I do want to say to folks, both State Fair and El Guapo, two of our most loyal sponsors are doing. If people aren't paying attention on Facebook, they're doing family meals every day. I know you see them.
I mean, you go out. I saw the lamb shanks, and it like
a family of four, man. You know,
have you ever had the lamb shanks, the Portales lamb shanks?
Oh, it's. Let me tell you, I kidded Evan, our sponsor, a couple weeks ago when he did them the first time. I made a fatal mistake. I waited until 3:30 or 4 that day to call and order them. They were already sold out. I had such a hankering for them that Linda went out and made lamb shanks, and I see he's done it again. But the family meals, I say, if there's only two of you, you go out, you have it today, you freeze it, and you have it again next week. Incredible family meals.
We're going to put them on the calendar. I'm going to talk about that so I know what my – I'm beating him up about meatloaf night, the TV dinner with the meatloaf.
Right.
But now we're like the weather breaks. I don't want meatloaf anymore.
There you
we're going to get over to El Guapo.
Thanks, Rob.
We'll get back to State Fair. And, Rob, we hope certainly great thanks for your boy in the veterinary
industry.
Go
I don't
Gators.
Want to call you about anything crazy anymore, like happening, but I'm sure something will. You know?
Hey, every once in a while, I still get a goofy phone call from somebody in the local media saying, hey, we got an outage up here. Can you tell us what's going on? Like, I've been gone, guys, for 10 years, but let me tell you where to call. I'll be happy to give you their personal phone number.
I just hope you're not on the 17th at the Pontevedra when that
hey,
happens.
Hey, Nestor, real quick, and he'll know. Rob will know. I'm not going to use any names, but it was one of the famous lines in county government was one of my counterparts screaming through my door, banging the door down, said, get gold on. I didn't even have to tell Rob who it was. I said, okay. I'll call Rob right now. He'll take care of it. Get gold on the phone now.
Many of those phone calls.
Snow's bad. The ice is you know, is not good. The wind and the ice, though. That's when.
Oh, man.
Hey, you know what? I don't know what was worse, energy or CSX and railroads. So let's
oh,
just,
my Lord. Know. Topic yeah. for another day.
Exactly.
Great
Rob,
one, Rob.
We appreciate
Thanks.
It. Thanks for coming on. Rob Gold, longtime energy insider with BG&E, NextEra Energy, down in Florida, all over the place. Florida Power and Light. I don't want to miss any of the, as well as
them.
The Towson Tigers.
There you go.
And Don Moeller, former Baltimore County executive. We've had great conversations here about all sorts of topics. I talked to Don's son about real estate last week, certainly the Terps, free agency, Orioles, but so much more. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and we never stop talking social studies in Baltimore Positive.